This episode of Tales from Ostlantis is brought to you by Ostlantis Premium. Don't you just hate having your favorite podcast interrupted by ads like this? Well, dear listener, you're in luck. Because starting at just $3 a month, you can support independent Chicano media and receive ad-free episodes, premium episodes, bonus content, and access to our Discord server. Just visit talesfromostlantis.com and click Go Premium, or follow the link in the show notes. And now, on with the show.
You must excuse me. I've grown quite weary.
This hasn't been easy, I know. But you've learned a lesson. A lesson in honesty. Honesty to yourself and honesty to others. That lesson will stand you in good stead all your life.
I think we've all learned a good lesson. I've always heard that honesty is the best policy. Now I'm catching on to why that's so,
Greetings, dear listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Tales from Ostlantis. I am your host, Curly Tlapoyawa.
And Ruben Arellano Tlacatecatl.
What's going on, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I can't complain too much.
Yeah. I don't know if you could hear, but apparently my house is currently under a flight path of a fleet
barely
of 747s. So listeners, I do apologize if you happen to hear that, but there is a major airport, a couple of airports here in Albuquerque, the Air Force Base and the airport. So When the planes are flying, it gets quite noisy.
And I don't know if you can hear, but I have dogs. My neighbor's dogs behind me are barking, and yeah,
it's so mass hysteria.
Got some noise. Cats and dogs
living together. Mass hysteria. So, how's the summer going, man? You teaching?
Yeah, I'm teaching, Maymester, summer one, summer two. I don't have any time off.
Damn.
I teach year round. I get 1 week off before we do what's called return week, and that's the week before classes start. They expect us to go back to campus, to attend a bunch of meetings and, you know, all this stuff. You know, you try to control us, man. It's all about that control. The man
Sounds
is trying
like
to control
it.
Us.
Holy smokes.
So I just get 1 week, 1 week off.
That sounds terrible. Yeah. Well, I've been having a great summer.
Rub it in, why don't you?
We went camping, which was nice. We went up to, where did we go? Heron Lake, which to our mutual disappointment of Michelle and I was not named after herons, but actually an engineer whose last name was Heron, the guy that built the dam.
I thought you said Hair on Lake.
Hair on Lake.
I was
lake.
Like, Hair yes. on. Man, that's something. So you were disappointed to not find any hair on the lake?
Hair on the lake. Was it was all water. It was weird. No hair.
It was all water.
But yeah, it was named after the engineer. So, I mean, I guess props to him, right? He got a lake named after him, but there were no herons.
So you were searching there. For Aztlan is what I'm hearing
I
as well.
I was. Right? You've busted me, sir. I'm trying to get a History Channel show over here.
That's right. Because they'll give anyone a show as long as you got a myth to sell.
Apparently so. So speaking of myths, we're going to be talking about one of our favorite myths, depending on how you define favorite, right? One of those myths that we we like to revisit on this show. So we've talked about this before in an earlier episode, and that is the myth of the Black Olmecs or the African Olmecs. And it takes on a certain number of iterations, this myth. So there's the camp that believes that the original people of the Americas were black people, they're therefore making the Olmecs black, because they're the true indigenous peoples. And then you have this other school of thought, which I think more people are familiar with. And this is the idea that black explorers landed in the Americas and bequeathed civilization unto our ignorant savage ancestors and taught us how to build temples and mathematics and science and whatnot, and that our ancestors were so subservient and docile and fawning over these great explorers that they erected these giant stone heads in tribute to the noble explorers who brought us our very own civilization. Either which one you've heard of, they're both bullshit. But it's one of these things that just won't go away, right? Like it seems to, you know, not to make a pun, but it seems to rear its head all the time, this unfortunate myth. So
History Channel, if you're listening, give us a call.
Yeah, we've got a myth. We've got a myth for you.
We can do a whole series on this.
So
literally,
in fact, here's a you know, one of our contributions to this, the destruction of this myth. And it has to do with the Olmecs. The Olmec people were one of the first major Mesoamerican civilizations. They lived in the tropical lowlands of the modern-day Mexican states of Veracruz and Tabasco from around 1500 BCE to 400 BCE. They are credited with the development of many important Mesoamerican cultural traits, including writing, calendars, and ball courts. They are also believed to be the ancestors of many later Mesoamerican civilizations. And it's fascinating when you look at the Olmecs, right? Because it's true. All of these things, you know, the writing systems, the calendar system, ball courts, they all came out of this civilization that was once referred to as the mother civilization. But now we kind of stopped calling it that. We now refer to it as sort of a sister civilization because there was like this multitude of other groups that were trading with each other and sort of coalescing, you know, throughout Mesoamerica and just giving rise to these different civilizations. But the Olmec, in my opinion, being a calendar guy, one of their most significant contributions was the calendar system that most people are familiar with throughout Mesoamerica. And it was inherited from the Olmecs, this idea of 18 months of 20 days with a 19th month of 5 days and, you know, the 1 through 13 numbering and the way that the days were named. All of this was inherited from the Olmecs. So it's truly a fascinating civilization. So it's no wonder that it would be, you know, a prime target for pseudo-historians to sort of latch onto because so little was known about and still known relatively. But early on, you know, in the history of what became, you know, modern Mexico, very little was known about the Olmecs. And so they always had this aura of mystery, this air of mystery around them that was really just easy for pseudo-historians to sort of take advantage of and craft these fantasy narratives to sort of depict and tell the story of who the Olmec people were. And one of the unfortunate consequences of this is this idea, or these two ideas that I just mentioned, that the Olmecs were either, you know, black Africans themselves or black themselves, not even Africans, but black indigenous people, or that the Olmecs were, you know, the inheritors of this knowledge, of this culture, of this civilization that was given to them by African explorers. So this is like this unfortunate consequence. And we saw, you know, here in New Mexico, I had to deal with it at UNM when UNM was sponsoring trips to Veracruz about the African or the black presence in Mexico. And of course, in all of the promotional literature, they would use the Olmec heads instead of just talking about the legitimate and actual history of Afro-Mexicanos. They relied on this pseudo-historical narrative to get across their ideas. And then we had the open letter that you and I co-wrote to the Urban Review, which was in response to an article that they had published. This is an academic journal that published an article promoting the idea that the Olmecs were black. And,
right.
you know, unquestioningly so, right? They didn't even question whether they were or were not black. The main thesis of this article was, you know, since the Olmecs were black, how can we best teach this in schools?
Mm-hmm.
So exactly. You and I co-wrote an open letter in response to this. And in one of, I don't know, it's something that I still take pride in because it's really hard to get journals to retract papers, but we got them to retract this, this paper and this journal. So,
And I should add that, you had scholars like Bernard Ortiz de Montellano going all the way back to the mid to late 90s.
Absolutely.
Who were already questioning all this stuff, especially Van Sertima's claims, because even though there are people, as we're going to show here, that came before Van Sertima that originated this myth, he's the one that's usually cited and credited with being the one that really popularized the mythology with his book, They Came Before Columbus. And so, you know, his ideas have already been disproven and rightly so. By, you know, scholars who actually study this for a living, who are professionals, who have gone to school, who have experience in the field looking at this material, especially Anne-Marie Cyphers, who regrettably recently left us. She passed away.
Rest in peace.
And so rest in peace to Anne-Marie Cyphers. She was one of the great scholars in the field of Olmec archaeology, and her contributions are enormous, and she will be missed.
Absolutely. So, dear listeners, kick back, relax, as we bring you the case against the African Olmec myth.
The myth. The African Olmec myth is a fringe theory that has been repeatedly debunked by archaeologists and other experts. The theory holds that the Olmec, one of the earliest and influential civilizations in Mesoamerica, were not indigenous to the Americas, but rather that they were descended from Africans who migrated to the Americas across the Atlantic Ocean. There is no scientific evidence to support this quote-unquote theory. In fact, virtually all experts in the field of Mesoamerica and Olmec civilization specialists agree that they were indigenous to the Americas. In other words, the Olmec culture arose independently in the Americas and was not imported or transplanted from somewhere else. Among the many sources of evidence which support this long-standing fact, we can add recent DNA studies which have only strengthened the established consensus. Researchers have found that Olmec DNA is closely related to the DNA of other indigenous peoples of the Americas and not to peoples from Africa or anywhere else. Another claim that the proponents of the myth like to toss out is the idea that Amerindigenous languages have a similarity to African languages, a claim which no serious linguist who doesn't have an agenda actually supports. This particular claim is among the first assertions that were advanced by some of the early archaeologists of the 19th century, at a time when the discipline was still trying to formalize itself with professional standards. People who continue to peddle this argument are not professionals in the field today and are stuck back in time. One way to look at this is by comparing the field of medicine. Imagine going to the doctor today and being prescribed leech therapy for your ailment. You would think that doc was a quack, and rightfully so. And that's exactly the type of reaction that African Olmec mythologists should be met with. No serious doctor would propose such a treatment because medicine has evolved, and we have much better ways of treating the sick. The same applies here. No one in the field of Olmec and Mesoamerican studies seriously entertains the notion that there is any connection between African languages and indigenous American ones. On the contrary, the Olmec language has been shown to be related to other indigenous languages of the Americas. Here are a few facts regarding the Olmec language.
Fact 1. It's considered to be a dead language that is not directly attested, and its identity is unknown. But linguistic evidence suggests that it was a Mishe-Zokian language. Mishe-Zokian languages are still spoken in the area where the Olmecs lived, and they share many words with Olmec words that have been borrowed into other Mesoamerican languages. Fact 2. Like many other Mesoamerican languages, it was probably a tonal language. It may have had a complex system of prefixes and suffixes, and it may have been polysyllabic. However, the details of the language are unknown, as no texts written in the language have survived. Fact 3. It was a major influence on the development of other Mesoamerican languages. Many words and grammatical features of the Olmec language were borrowed into other languages such as Maya, Zapotec, and Mixtec. The Olmec language played a role in the development of the Mesoamerican writing system.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Have you picked up your Mexica calendar for the year 12 Flint? Or how about a paperback copy of The Four Disagreements? Just visit talesfromastlantis.com for all the latest merchandise and show some love for your favorite podcast. That's talesfromastlantis.com for all the latest merchandise. Now, back to the show.
Above all, it's important to note that the Olmec civilization existed so long ago that by the time of European invasion, there were no living speakers, so no one really knows what it sounded like. Claiming to know for a fact that it relates to any other language outside of Mesoamerica is misguided and simply wrong. The African Olmec myth is based on several misconceptions, but the one that prevails is the one surrounding the interpretation of the Olmec heads. These are a series of large stone sculptures that are characterized by their large size, flat faces, and broad noses. Some people have suggested that the heads depict Africans due to their resemblance to sub-Saharan African features. However, there is no scientific evidence to support this claim. It's important to note that large heads are not unique and are found in many different cultures around the world, such as the Moai, which are monolithic human figures carved by the Rapa Nui people on what is now known as Easter Island in eastern Polynesia between the years 1250 and 1500 CE.
Have you seen, hate to interrupt, but have you seen a Moai in person?
I have not.
They are incredibly impressive. And the only reason I know this is because I did not go to Easter Island, my friend, but I went to the British National Museum.
Oh, that's right.
And yeah.
They have one there.
Mm-hmm. They do. And it was, you know, awe-inspiring to see a Moai in person, to like to actually see one. But it was also really infuriating to see a Moai. An actual Moai that had been taken and placed in the British National Museum.
Colonizers will colonize.
Absolutely.
Like the Moai, the Olmec heads are some of the most iconic artifacts in the history of human artistry. Typically made of basalt, the heads are often found in pairs, and they are thought to represent Olmec rulers or deities. Besides the physiognomic claims of African resemblance, their appeal can also be attributed to their size. Weighing up to 20 tons in some cases, this makes them some of the largest and heaviest sculptures from antiquity. And while Olmec art is often compared to that of ancient Egypt, there's no doubt that the Olmecs developed their own unique style independent of that from other parts of the world. African Olmec mythologists like to claim that there is an Egyptian influence on Olmec art, but the fact remains that there is no evidence pointing to any outside influence. The Olmec, their language, culture, and art were Amerindigenous, period. The African Olmec myth is harmful because it erases the indigenous identity of the Olmec. Accept it or not, the Olmec were indigenous Americans who made significant contributions to the development of Mesoamerican culture. Attempts to state otherwise will always fall short due to the lack of substantial evidence demonstrating any real connection between Africa and America prior to 1492. The case against the African Olmec myth is based on several factors, including genetic, archaeological, linguistic, and cultural evidence. For the sake of clarity, here are some brief descriptions of what is meant by those types of evidence.
Genetic evidence. Genetic studies of the Olmec have shown that they were closely related to other indigenous peoples of Mesoamerica, not to Africans. And I would like to quote this article of this study, speaking of Dr. Ann Cyphers, who conducted the DNA testing of bodies that were found in that region. And the headline is, Olmec colossal heads are of Mesoamerican and non-African origin. And the subheader says, university archaeologists discard the theory that the oldest civilization in Mesoamerica has its roots in Africa. And this is from a report by the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México, also known as UNAM, from February 9th, 2020. And just a quote from the beginning of this story, the origin of the colossal Olmec heads is not African, as has been rumored for 150 years, but Mesoamerican, said Ann Cyphers, an academic at the Institute of Anthropological Research of the UNAM, who together with her collaborators have carried out studies of mitochondrial DNA that prove the identity of the Olmecs, the oldest civilization in these lands. The expert recalled that the theories of African origin and transoceanic migrations are deeply rooted in the collective imagination. So, and to quote, it has been very difficult to shake off these ideas, said Ann Cyphers. Ann Cyphers, discoverer in 1994 of the most recent of the 17 Olmec heads known so far, found in the archaeological site of San Lorenzo Tenochtitlan in Veracruz, explained that this thesis dates from 1869 and was proposed by José María Melgar y Serrano, who reported the first colossal head in what is now Tres Zapotes, Veracruz. And Ann Cyphers, Dr. Cyphers, goes on to say, at that time, the existence of the Olmec culture was not known, and Melgar proposed that the features of the sculptures corresponded to characters from Ethiopia, black people, more than anything because of the facial features. Hence, this speculation was born and a controversy was formed that haunts us in Olmec archaeology. So, very, a good way to explain it, Dr. Cyphers. And it's interesting because people will ask me, how come more archaeologists aren't coming out against this? And I'm like, well, because archaeologists don't actively put out research disproving shit that we already know is wrong, So like, you've got your own work to do. You're not going to spend all your time like, well, should we still be doing this Noah's Ark thing? Like, no, man, we know that that doesn't exist.
Right.
But
yeah, I don't think the general public really understands how academia works.
No, right? And yeah, that's a great point. But like Ann Cypher said, this is something that has haunted Olmec archaeology. And so now with the latest technology, she was finally able to conduct the research and prove conclusively through DNA testing. So,
well, we're gonna say a few words about Melgar down the road here.
Yeah.
So let's save some
for
of that.
Sure. Archaeological evidence. There is no archaeological evidence of contact between Africa and the Americas prior to the arrival of Europeans. And this one's really funny because one of the images that proponents of the Black Olmec myth like to share is of this Olmec head from Ethiopia. And they just show this photo and they're like, well, what about this? And it's like, well, yeah, look at, just go a little bit further down on the photo and you'll see that this is a replica of an Olmec head that was gifted by the Mexican government to Ethiopia.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, and of course they cut off the that part, right? They'll cut that part of the photo out.
The caption on the sculpture. Yeah,
that explains the sculpture.
Explains.
But they'll just be like, well, explain this. It's like, well, read the goddamn thing. Linguistic evidence. Yeah. Sad trombone. Linguistic evidence. The Olmec language has been lost, but there is no evidence that it was related to any African language. And this is another thing that you always hear, right? Is it what's the African language that they claim that it's so closely related to? Like, I can't remember. But they'll just repeat this like it's gospel, you know? And it's like, well, do you have any proof? And of course they don't have any proof. Cultural evidence. The Olmec culture shared many similarities with other indigenous cultures of Mesoamerica, and there are no clear parallels with African cultures. I repeat, no clear parallels. Zero.
And to repeat, the four points are genetic evidence, archaeological evidence, linguistic evidence, and cultural evidence. And of those four main points, none of them connect the Olmec to Africa. Myth proponents. The first proponents of the African Olmec hypothesis were a group of Afrocentrists who emerged in the 1960s and 1970s. These individuals, such as Ivan Van Sertima and Sheikh Anta Diop, argued that the Olmec were descended from Africans who had migrated to the Americas across the Atlantic Ocean. They based their claims on a few factors, including the Olmec's large heads, which they argued were like those of Africans, and the Olmec's art style, which they contended was influenced by ancient Egypt. In the following section, we will discuss some of the myth's biggest proponents and take a closer look at the origins of this insidious idea.
Sheikh Anta Diop. Our first individual is Sheikh Anta Diop, a Senegalese historian, anthropologist, physicist, and politician who studied the human race's origins and pre-colonial African culture. Diop's work is considered foundational to the theory of Afrocentricity, and although he himself never described himself as an Afrocentrist, the questions he posed about cultural bias in scientific research contributed greatly to the post-colonial turn in the study of African civilizations. Diop fantasized that the Olmec were not indigenous to the Americas, but rather they were descended from Africans who migrated to the Americas across the Atlantic Ocean. So apparently, my milkshake Anta Diop brings the lies to the yard. But I got a few things to say about Sheikh Anta Diop here. Just briefly. Just going through some stuff said about him by historians and anthropologists. According to Andrew Francis Clark, the associate professor of history at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, and Lucy Colvin Phillips, professor of African studies in the University of Maryland, although Diop's work has been influential, it has generally been discredited by historians. Other history professors have characterized his writings on ancient Egypt as revisionist, and most notably, Mary Lefkowitz, who, if you haven't read her book, History Lesson, it's one of my favorite books, and she talks about her direct encounter with extreme Afrocentrism in a university and how speaking out against historical revisionism nearly cost her job. So if you have a chance, read the book by Mary Lefkowitz, History Lesson. Mary Lefkowitz, scholar of classics, accuses Diop of supplying his readers only with selected and to some extent, distorted information. She criticizes his methodology, stating that his writing allows him to disregard historical evidence, especially if it comes from European sources, which sounds strangely familiar to me, this claim that you can't trust anything if it comes from a European source. So sorry, Milkshake.
The next individual is Yosef Ben Yochanan. I think that's how you say his name.
I believe so.
And he was an Ethiopian-American scholar who argued that the Olmec were descended from the African descendants of biblical Israelites who had migrated to the Americas after the destruction of the first temple of Jerusalem. I'll say that again because that's a lot to take in. He believed that the Olmec descended from African descendants from the Bible, known as the Israelites, who then migrated to the Americas after the destruction of the first temple in Jerusalem.
Just checks out.
Soak that in. Just ponder on that for a second. Typical of African Olmec mythologists, he based his claims on a number of factors, including the physical features of Olmec sculptures, the supposed presence of African words in the Olmec language, and the similarity between Olmec art and artifacts and of those of ancient Egypt. Ben Yochanan's ideas have been embraced by some African Americans who see them as a way of reclaiming their heritage. His work has also been influential in the Afrocentric movement, which seeks to promote African culture and history. Here are some of the most problematic claims attributed to Ben Yochanan. 1. That the Olmec were a black civilization. 2. That they were the ancestors of the ancient Egyptians. And 3. That they were the first civilization in the Americas and were responsible for the development of many of the key technologies that were later used by Mesoamerican civilizations, but thanks to Africans. That's essentially what he is pushing here. He is basically saying, if were it not for these black Africans who crossed the ocean, who happened to be Israelites as well, not just black Africans, but they were black Israelite Africans who then crossed the ocean to the Americas. And as you were saying at the beginning, Curly, to teach those ignorant indigenous peoples of Mesoamerica how to do things because apparently they couldn't do anything for themselves.
Yep. And interesting side note about Yosef Ben Yochanan, who is known in the Afrocentrist circles as Dr. Ben, is how they'll refer to him. Okay. He's Dr. Ben. Well,
does he have a PhD?
Well, I'm glad you asked, sir.
Is he like Dr. York?
He stated that in 1939, he earned a master's degree in architectural engineering from the University of Havana, Cuba. He also claimed to have earned doctoral degrees in cultural anthropology and Moorish history from the University of Havana and the University of Barcelona, Spain, respectively, and advanced degrees from Cambridge University in England. So no slouch if these were true. But, however, both Barcelona and Cambridge say that he never received any degrees from either university. And furthermore, Cambridge University says that there was no record at all of Ben Yochanan, Dr. Ben, ever attending any classes at Cambridge. So I did a little digging, my friend, an archaeology pun there. And turns out that Ben Yochanan, Dr. Ben, actually holds honorary doctoral degrees from Sojourner Douglas College in Baltimore, Marymount College in New York, and Medgar Evers College in Brooklyn. One of these, I can't remember which one, I believe the one in Baltimore was shut down because they lost their accreditation. They were basically like a diploma mill.
Okay.
And the other ones, as far as I could tell, they were legit, but again, these are honorary.
Honorary, exactly.
Doctoral degrees.
Right. I mean, they give those out to just anyone nowadays.
Well, interesting that you should say that, my friend, because right before this podcast,
Wait, did you get one?
Did
you get one?
Sir, my friend, I hopped online and I got myself an honorary doctorate in metaphysics. So,
Dr. Tlapoyawa.
Dr. Arellano.
All right. From doctor
so,
to doctor.
But you know, doctor. What movie was that from?
I don't remember.
Is that Spies
now.
Like Us?
Maybe.
Where they meet every doctor, doctor, doctor. So, you know, just to show you how valid these, you know, honorary doctoral degrees are, your boy jumped online in about 5 minutes.
Got an honorary doctorate from...
He got me an honorary doctoral degree. It was like $10.
$10,
and they're
going
to mail it to me.
Wow.
And I'm going to...
You're going to frame
it?
Frame it.
You're
going to hang it?
Put it up in my office.
Nice, nice.
And I'm going to be called Dr. Curly from now on. Because, God damn it, if other people can call themselves doctors...
Right.
With honorary degrees...
Why not you?
Just to show, you know, not a lot of...
Someone needs to give you an honorary doctorate at this point. Come on. Come on, UNM,
right?
If you're listening, or
yeah.
Who would it be? Would it be UNM?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's where I went.
Yeah, but I mean, who
alma mater.
Who would you want to give you an honorary doctorate in your field? Which one would it be? If you were to choose, if they were all knocking at your door and only one can give you the doctor, who would you pick?
You know, honestly, I would like to get it from UNM, but I would want... Dr. Crown, Dr. Patricia
okay.
Crown,
nice.
To be the one who...
nice lady. I met her once at SMU. She went and gave a talk.
She told me.
Yeah. I went up to her and said, hey, you know my friend Curly Tlapoyawa, he's a student of yours. She's like, yes, I know him. Yes, good guy. I'm like, eh, I don't know about all that. You don't know him that well. Let me tell you.
Let me tell you something about old Dr. Curly.
Let me tell you about him.
So, my friend, I am now a doctor in the same
awesome.
Sense that Dr. Pepper or Dr. Dre, Dr. Seuss.
Wait, was Dr. Seuss an actual doctor? I don't know.
You know what? I don't know. Now that I've said that, I'm like, wait, God damn it, was he an actual doctor? Well, at least Dr. Pepper and Dr. Dre. And Hunter S. Thompson had an honorary doctor.
Okay.
People actually called him Dr. Thompson.
So you're in good company there.
Absolutely. So yes.
Nice.
And for $9.99, you too.
Obtain your own honorary doctorate from
honorary
the
doctorate.
University of Metaphysics. So now on to Maulana Karenga.
Maulana Karenga. Another prominent figure is Maulana Karenga. Karenga is an African-American scholar, activist, and author who is known for his work on Africana studies and black nationalism. He is the founder, and he's probably known best for this, as the founder of Kwanzaa, a seven-day holiday that celebrates African culture and heritage, and has also been a vocal proponent of the theory, it's not even a hypothesis, of the conjecture
right.
that the Olmecs were of African descent. Just as those before him, he points to the Olmec sculptures, which he imagines have features that are like those of sub-Saharan Africans. Karenga's support for the African Olmec myth is part of his larger project of promoting black pride and identity. He believes that it is important for African Americans to know about their African heritage and sees the Olmecs as a symbol of the great civilization that have existed in Africa. So,
you know, I mean, this is, yeah. I mean, to his credit, right? I mean, Kwanzaa, I don't know how many people follow that, but, I've known people who celebrated, and I think it's a great thing that African-Americans, you know, want to connect with their roots in Africa, and that Kwanzaa is a meaningful thing that allows them to do that.
Yeah, but we've talked about this before.
Right.
New traditions are still
exactly,
valid traditions.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, it's like you're doing this good thing over here, but at the same time, you're like engaged in this other, you know, conjecture of Africans and Olmecs because it's part of the same idea of making black people feel good because of all the oppression and the history that they've experienced here in the United States. But when you're doing it at the expense of someone else's culture, I mean, I don't know. I have a problem with that, especially if it happens to be the culture of my ancestors. I'm going to really have a problem with that. You know, it's like...
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how would you like it if someone started to claim that, in fact, all of African culture owes its inception, its history, its origins to, say, Amerindigenous people? Because guess what? There were people in the Mexicayot movement going back to the 1920s, even before Van Sertima and all these guys, right? That were already saying that it was people from Mesoamerica that had actually traveled to across the ocean and made it to Egypt and had taught all the Egyptians everything that they knew on how to construct pyramids. And that in turn, they influenced the Greeks and influenced the Romans, and that Europe and European culture owes its very existence to those, you know, indigenous American travelers. And guess what? That's also nonsense. It's complete hogwash and we don't support it. And you know, but it's on both sides. It's on both ends. And I don't know. I mean, it's, what's it going to take? What do you think? What's it going to take to finally get some of these people to recant, to say, all right, you know, well, I've been pushing this idea for a very long time. And I finally realized that, you know, doing it at the expense of someone else's culture is not a good thing. I mean, do you think that's ever going to happen?
I don't know, because, you know, there's not a lot of money in admitting you were wrong.
Oh, true, true.
And,
yeah.
And if you know, you're making money off of it, if you're selling this idea and it's somehow beneficial to you,
right,
to your social standing, mm-hmm, to your self-esteem, exactly, and your place in the community, you really don't want to come out and be like, hey, guys, I'm sorry. But guess what?
You know, all this stuff I've been saying for decades. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of these guys, they know they're wrong.
You think so?
I think they have to know they're wrong. I think at least some.
Okay.
I won't say a lot of them. I think at least some of them know absolutely that they're 100% pushing horse shit out there, but they're making money off of it. And it's making people feel good about, mm-hmm, themselves, right?
Yeah.
So they probably rationalize that in their head.
Right.
Like, yeah, I mean, what I'm saying isn't actually factual, but if it gives this kid some self-esteem.
Right.
And to me, that's like discrediting the actual culture of your own people. Like saying, well, what, your real culture can't give,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
them self-esteem? You got to make some shit up.
Yeah.
You got to attribute other people's culture, right, to your ancestors, because that's fucked up.
Right.
That's not the way to go, in my opinion. So, yeah, I don't know if any of these guys will ever actually have the...
decency?
The decency. Yeah.
I mean...
That's perfect word.
Yeah.
To actually come out and admit that they're wrong.
And
if you're interested in Karenga, I'm not going to besmirch the person on here, but, you know, maybe do a Google search on him and see the various crimes that he was convicted, ooh, of and the things that he did, because kind of messed up.
Wow. Not a good look, huh? So, speaking of not looking good, Mr. Ivan Van Sertima, I don't think time has proven his ideas any more so than they were complete bunk when he first put them out back in the 1970s.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's perhaps the most well-known of these pseudo-historical peddlers, and in fact, he's probably the godfather of it all, Mr. Ivan Van Sertima himself, who... was a Guyanese-American scholar best known for his Afrocentric theories about the Olmec. He argued that the Olmec were descended from Africans who migrated to the Americas across the Atlantic Ocean. And his theories have been criticized by mainstream archaeologists and other experts for several reasons. You know, first of all, Van Sertima, and we're talking about the guy who wrote the book, They Came Before Columbus. His theories are based on misconceptions about the Olmec and their culture. They lack originality or actual evidence. He points to the large Olmec heads as evidence for their African ancestry, which is what everyone else has been saying. However, as previously stated, large heads are not unique and are found in many different cultures around the world. So Van Sertima, you know, who compared that also, like others, Olmec art to that of ancient Egypt, claimed that connection. But again, the Olmecs developed their own unique art style, and there's no evidence whatsoever, none, that they were influenced by the ancient Egyptians whatsoever, at all. Zero. Silch. Van Sertima's theories are based on a lack of scientific evidence. For instance, Van Sertima maintained that the Olmecs spoke an African language. Again, unoriginal. Spoiler alert, there's no scientific evidence to support this claim. Additionally, he claimed that the Olmec were buried with African artifacts. Now, this is going to be the kicker. Unfortunately for him, those supposed artifacts have been found to be complete and utter fakes. Do you know what these are? Have you heard of this before? These supposed African artifacts that were buried with the Olmecs?
Yeah, I'd heard of it, but I've never like dug deeper into it.
Okay. So, making things worse for Mr. Van Sertima, his theories are rooted in several logical fallacies. A case in point, he argued that the Olmec must have been Africans because they had some similarities to African cultures. Not only is there no positive evidence for this claim, but this is also a logical fallacy known as the argument from analogy. Just because two things are similar in some ways does not mean that they are similar in all ways. Way. So, to reiterate, Ivan Van Sertima's theories are based on speculation and lack of scientific evidence. He often made claims that were not supported by the archaeological record, and in fact, it's more likely that he purposely misinterpreted the sources to fit his theories. In other words, he engaged in cherry-picking, another fallacy. Finally, it's worth noting that he ignored evidence which contradicted his ideas, such as the fact that Olmec DNA has been found to be closely related to the DNA of other indigenous peoples of the Americas, proving that the Olmec were indigenous to the Americas and not Africa. And I should mention here that Mr. Van Sertima was still alive when the DNA studies were made. He died in 2009, so it can't be said that because he published a book in the 70s that he didn't know about this. He maintained to his very last days his ideas about the African Olmec connection. So, it's important to note that Van Sertima and his fellow mythologists are not considered to be credible by mainstream archaeological communities, such as those that Curly mentioned earlier. Their theories have been repeatedly debunked by archaeologists and other experts, and we can conclusively state that there is no scientific evidence to support the African Olmec myth. It's pure fantasy.
Boom. I think that's what they call a mic drop.
Mic drop.
The myth's origin. But where does the myth originate? Was it with the Afrocentrists themselves? Fortunately for us, we've been able to track down a much earlier source dating to the middle of the 19th century. The African Olmec myth was first proposed in the 1860s by the Mexican archaeologist José María Melgar y Serrano. He argued that the Olmecs were of African descent based on the physical features of some Olmec sculptures. In effect, the incredibly simplistic notion based on antiquated analysis which linked the Olmec heads to Africa solely on superficialities was first proposed by Melgar over 160 years ago. Yes, you heard that correctly. Over 160 years ago. But what's funny is there's this group, there's a contingent, and they're almost entirely pseudo-historians. They see that as strength, right? It's like this argument from antiquity where, well, they claimed it 160 years ago. And it's like, yeah, so they didn't know what the fuck they were talking about. Come on. As previously mentioned, archaeology, like many other disciplines, changes, progresses, and evolves over time. And no one in the field accepts the wacky ideas put forth by people like Melgar almost two centuries ago because they are old and based on limited knowledge. And I always argue this is the strength of science, is that our perceptions change as new information, as new and better data become available, our views change as the information becomes available. We don't change the information to try to conform to our views because we're in love right. with our ideas, right?
And that's true for history as well. Yeah, absolutely. I tell my students all the time that, you know, we know the facts and historian, you know, as a historian, we interpret those facts, but also we, whenever we come across new evidence, new sources that might, you know, tell a different story on a specific topic that we have been in telling a certain way for many years, then we have to accommodate those sources and we have to revise our history. So, you know, doing revisionist history is not a bad thing. That's what we do in history. We do it all the time. It's just when you are doing it in bad faith and when you are cherry picking the evidence to support a preconceived notion instead of letting the sources speak for themselves, that's when, you know, revisionist history goes bad.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
you're not doing it
when you're engaging in confirmation bias.
Exactly.
It is truly amazing to see modern day people with no specialized training or expertise advance this myth as theory and virtually dismissing all the science and research that has countered Melgar's original claims. The only plausible explanation here is that this willful ignorance is performed solely based on perpetuating facile observations that feel good. But let's leave that problematic subject aside and explore who Melgar was. José Melgar was a Mexican archaeologist who lived from 1828 to 1895. He is best known for his work on the Olmecs and was the first to suggest that they were of African descent in his book Estudios sobre la Antigüedad y el Origen de la Cabeza Colosal de Tipo Etiópico. Etiópico? Did I say that right? Que existe en Hueyapam del Cantón de los Tuxtlas. So would you like to translate that?
Okay. A study over the antiquity and the origin of the colossal heads of Egyptian style that exist in Hueyapan of Canton de los Tuxtlas.
Tuxtlas.
Did I say that? Did I anglify that properly enough?
Melgar was born in Oaxaca. Lucky. Studied law at the National University of Mexico, but he soon became interested in archaeology. In 1854, he was appointed as the director of the National Museum of Anthropology, and in this role, he oversaw the excavation of many important archaeological sites, including the Olmec site of San Lorenzo Tenochtitlan. Melgar's work on the Olmec was groundbreaking. He was the first to identify them as a distinct civilization, and he was the first to study their art and culture in detail. He is credited with originating the hypothesis that the Olmec were of African descent. And what evidence did he have for this assertion? Just his observation that some Olmec heads had features resembling those of sub-Saharan Africans. For instance, take the following quote.
We went. And I was struck with surprise. As a work of art, it is without exaggeration a magnificent sculpture. But what astounded me was the Ethiopic type which it represents. I reflected that there had undoubtedly been blacks in this country, and this had been in the first epoch of the world. That head was not only important for Mexican archaeology, but also would be for the world in general.
By the way, that quote right there gets repeated all the time by the, Afrocentric extremists. So that's it. That's Melgar's justification for his Black Olmec claim, one that has been used repeatedly without question because it supports the claim advanced by African Olmec mythologists. And it's such a goofy claim, right?
It is.
Like, they have big nose and big lips. It's like, have you ever seen a Mexican? Come on, man.
It's like that old Olmec gem. I like big noses and I cannot lie.
Wah, wah. Melgar is considered one of the founders of Mexican archaeology, and it's unfortunate that people who are not experts or well-versed in the principles of science have taken his work on the Olmec as the ultimate truth, deriding and disparaging the ongoing research that gives us a clearer picture of the Olmec culture. What mythologists fail to understand is that Melgar's work represents ideas born out of a time when the discipline of archaeology was still in its infancy, and the scientific method was not yet fully developed nor universally applied. You wouldn't accept outmoded interpretations for medicine, mechanics, technology, or any scientific field of inquiry, so why insist on doing it here?
But it's like you said, it's about feel good, and also because it's ancient, you know. The older it is, the more authentic it is.
Yeah, which is such a strange way to look at the world.
It is, right. I wonder how many of these people don't use modern technology of any kind because it's inauthentic. I mean, it's of the...
Yeah, I mean, it's modern.
It's modern, you know? It's current year.
Let's go back to the time where we were like...
Like the Amish, you know? Yeah. Are these people living an Amish lifestyle? Are they calling themselves the Olmish? I don't know, maybe.
The Olmish.
Wait, did we just start a movement?
Oh, shit.
Conclusion.
They came before Jedediah.
The answer perhaps lies in what we like to call comfort colonialism, thanks to Curly, who coined that term. Except here, the colonialism is self-imposed, and it is employed in the service of countering centuries of trauma in the African-American community. While it's true that indigenous, black, Asian, and other communities of color impacted by European colonization of the Americas require much-needed healing and reconciliation, it cannot be done at the expense of someone else's culture. Indigenous people have a term for that. It's called Columbusing, which is a form of cultural appropriation that steals history, art, culture, and spirituality from Native Americans. In conclusion, there is no credible evidence to support the claim that the Olmecs were of African origin, and the case against the African Olmec myth is based on a variety of factors we've shown here, including genetic, archaeological, linguistic, and cultural. So, on behalf of our indigenous ancestors, we humbly ask that you stop doing it. Stop Columbusing our culture. You wouldn't like it if the shoe were on the other foot.
You're goddamn right. What's funny, though, is, you know, when we say that, you know, that the Olmecs obviously were not Africans, one of the first comebacks I always get is, well, all human beings are African origin. It's like, that's not what we're talking about, dipshit. God damn it. Right,
there's always some smart.
Yeah, there's always the one. And or then you get the ones that which are just spectacularly and authentically stupid, because they'll come out and be like, well, you know, Pangea.
Oh my God.
Pangea existed, everything.
Someone just used that on me recently.
Are you serious?
I kid you not. Someone just made that argument to me. We were having this discussion, and they brought up Pangea, and I'm like, you do know Pangea was before the dinosaurs, right? Like, this is before humans. You do understand how that works, right?
It's like, well, Pangea was like 335 million years ago or something.
I mean,
what the hell are you talking about?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
During
Pangea, the people walked from Africa to, it's like, yeah, they were eating Brontosaurus burgers. And it's like, you're thinking of the Flintstones, buddy.
Like, oh my God, you people are so ridiculous.
The stupidity is spectacular. Yeah, so I'll get that. I'll get the, well, all human beings are African. It's like, well, yes, but that's not what we're talking about. And two, those original peoples who evolved in Africa, by the way, did not look like, there was no color. There was no race. Mm-hmm. There was, you know, they were literally, you know, the Australopithecines did not look like us.
Mm-hmm. So not even.
Not even close.
Yeah.
So maybe they should stop with that. And then the Pangea thing. I can't believe somebody brought that up.
Where does that even come from? Someone, one of these mythologist has to be peddling that idea for multiple people, because you've encountered it, I've encountered it. So someone must be peddling that pen. Like, what is the argument, though? What are they saying? Like, what? Like, because before the continent separated, that therefore the ancient ancestors of humans who emerged out of Africa made it to the Americas, that doesn't even prove that it was black Africans, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
it kind of disproves what they're saying, even if it were true, which is not even by a long shot, right? But if it were true, it just means that those people are part of the same migration pattern as the rest of humanity that ended up developing their own separate cultures over the millennia that have nothing to do with each other, period.
Yeah. So tell me this, though. Was this in real life or was it over the
internet? No, this was in real life.
God damn.
And what's going to make it worse is that this was a professor
where
I teach.
No.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. And I'm like, oh, my God. And so this person's not even a history or sociology. I think they teach economics, which is good because they're not peddling this to their students. But the fact that you have someone who is educated, who has, you know, degrees, advanced degrees in their field.
Ostensibly.
I mean, I guess I can forgive them for not being historians and falling for this kind of nonsense because they don't have the training to be able to discern fact from fiction. But the fact that you have a person at that level that is spewing this nonsense at a college, it's disturbing.
That's disheartening. Yeah. Well, I told you about the time that this professor, I don't recall where, but it was this Zoom talk that they were going to give on their research of the Olmec. Oh, no. Okay. It was their research on Afro-Mexicanos in Veracruz, right? And so I popped on for a little bit and I was watching it and I had to stop watching the Zoom, but there was like this discussion of it on Facebook and the professor was there fielding questions. So I asked him, I wasn't able to watch the whole thing, but please tell. And I was even joking when I said it because I thought, well, here's a professor. Of course they wouldn't be doing this. I said, please tell me that you didn't push, you know, the idea that the Olmecs were black Africans or that the Olmecs were black. And I kid you not, immediately they responded and it was like, what do you mean the Olmecs weren't black? And so I thought they were joking back, like, oh, now we're playing like a game. We're doing a bit now, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
so you're like, I'm going to keep with the
bit. Yeah. And they were like, they were flabbergasted and they said, well, it didn't make it into the recorded portion, but when I started, I did talk about the fact and that, you know, the fact.
Oh, he said fact.
Yeah, I did talk about the fact that, you know, the Olmecs were black. And I'm like, why, what? And they even went on saying, you know, you're the first person I've ever heard deny that.
The questions.
You're the first person who's ever questioned that. And I was like, oh, man. And you're a professor. Okay, great.
That's sad for him. That's very sad. Or him or her, whoever it was. That's sad for them.
Yeah, it was.
No one's ever pushed back on this. And this is a person that's giving public lectures. And no one's pushed back. Not even questioned it, like, in public. Even if they're just, I'm asking questions.
Yeah.
I'm just asking a question here. Even if they're pulling that bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, no one's ever done that in public. It's hard for me to believe that.
I find that hard to believe as well. Or maybe they're just so insulated because I think they were a professor of ethnic studies and not like history.
That explains it.
So they exist in this bubble of postmodern feel-goodery, which is the nicest way that I could say it.
Or how was it, what was that term that you used recently in the Discord channel? Postmodern goofballs?
Oh, yeah, postmodern goofballs. Yep. But, you know, if any of our listeners want if you're tired of our tomfoolery on this episode, if you want, like, a really thorough, well-written, researched, just complete evisceration of Van Sertima. There's a paper called They Were Not Here Before Columbus, Afrocentric Hyperdiffusionism in the 1990s by, and you'd mentioned him earlier, Bernard Ortiz de Montellano, RIP, mm-hmm. that guy was a badass, as well as Gabriel Haslip Vieira and Warren Barber. This is an excellent paper, and it's just a thorough ass beating of this outdated, you know, nonsense. So I'll put a link to it in the show notes if anybody wants to read that paper, because I highly recommend it. And I think it's worth mentioning that back in 2004, none other than Yale University put on a play, a rendering of Shakespeare's King Lear, right? And King Lear is a black character in the Shakespearean play. And in the play at Yale, it was set in Mesoamerica. So if you Google it, there's still images of it online. There's this massive Olmec head and, you know, all the actors are acting out King Lear and putting on this production. And, so I was curious. I did a Google search, and sure enough, people were pushing back then. This was 2004. Nice. And I found from the Yale News, so Yale's student newspaper,
right,
put out, it's from March 4th, 2004, and the headline is Afrocentrism in Lear Overlooks Native People.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. And
so
good on them.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad this individual spoke out. And, you know,
speaking of speaking out, we need more people to speak out. It can't just be us,
right?
We're just two individuals who, you know, have a deep interest in this because of our culture and also our connection through Mexicayot, and so, you know, we have this little platform that, you know, you are listening to, this little podcast episode that, you know, reaches a few people, but, you know, it just can't be us. It has to be more people out there, especially in academic spaces. We're not calling for people to go out and, you know, contest every single instance that they see, but when you see it in public, if you're attending one of these lectures where people are pushing and peddling this sort of stuff, at the very least, you know, stand up and say, well, you know, those ideas are not fully validated by the sources. Those ideas are questionable. Mm-hmm. When you call them facts, what sources are you citing? And if all they can cite is Van Sertima, then, you know, the comeback is, like we did in the paper, is, well, Van Sertima doesn't produce any original material. Everything that he uses as evidence is secondary sources. Mm-hmm. That's no way to prove anything, because you're not using any actual primary sources to
and especially
support your claims.
If your secondary sources are outdated
and questionable,
and in most cases discredited, because we have better information.
Exactly, but at the very least, if you don't have that kind of savvy and expertise, at the very least, you know, just speak up and say, well, you know, this isn't a proven fact. This is just a conjecture that some people have pushed for decades, but there's no solid evidence to support any of those claims. So please, we urge you, we want you to not just listen to this episode, not just listen to what we're saying, but get a little bit more proactive. We're not saying get into people's faces and shouting matches or get into physical altercations with folks, right?
Yeah.
We're just saying, you know, stand up and push back on some of this, because it can't just be,
for sure, 100%.
It can't just be a couple of people doing it. Otherwise, this is going to continue.
Yeah. Yep. And shout out to James Terry, who wrote this piece for the Yale News.
Shout out, James Terry.
I would like to end this episode with a quote from their
Good.
Piece. So quoting James Terry now. Contrary to the crackpot fantasies of Afrocentrists and Eurocentrists, archaeological research in Mesoamerica suggests unequivocally that indigenous cultures developed in situ. To date, no artifacts from across the seas have been found in controlled archaeological context in Mesoamerica. No transfers of technology from Africa or Europe, such as metallurgy or the wheel, were present when the Spaniards arrived, and none have been excavated. What we do find, however, is ample evidence for cultural change, from hunter-gatherer societies to villages to cities. It is a history of population growth accompanied by increasing social complexity. There are no sudden, mysterious fluorescences, no ex nihilo creations requiring recourse in diffusionist myth-making. The ancient Mesoamericans, it turns out, were much like humans everywhere. Sometimes noble, sometimes savage, often ingenious, they created art and cities and elaborate philosophical systems, and they did it all on their own.
Nice.
So shout out.
That's a mic drop.
Yep, absolutely. Homeboys speaking the truth.
And what is it about that truth, Curly?
Well, the truth is like medicine. Doesn't always taste good, but it is always good for you.
Doctor?
Doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
Thank you for listening to Tales from Aztlantis, a project of the Chimali Institute of Mesoamerican Arts. If you enjoy the show, please consider becoming a Patreon supporter. You can do this by visiting talesfromaztlantis.com and clicking Support the Podcast. Your continued support will help keep the podcast ad-free and independent. Until next time, Timo Itase.